What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast, back at it again, a little Friday edition as we cruise you on into the weekend. And, you know, this might be a little shorter of a podcast. Well, actually, maybe not. But I'm going to hit on the CBA, and that's as of recording this, going back and forth. I did a little research. I was talking DMing with a player involved in this and got some good information and just a little baffled by some of the things. And I see both sides. I'm not team owner or team player. I get it. Like, it's going to get ugly. That's what a negotiation of billions of dollars usually is, because every half a point, meaning half a percentage, is a lot of money. So these get a little ugly, and we'll hit on both sides, things that really jump out to me, just the information that we have so far on a deal that I'm recording this on Thursday afternoon. I guess the players technically could vote on Friday. It ain't going to happen, I'm sure. But I would imagine this thing gets done, but it does have huge ramifications, because if a contract is finished, the collective bargaining agreement, team like the Dallas Cowboys and a team like the Tennessee Titans can no longer franchise and transition tag Amari Cooper, Dak Prescott, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry. So big implications with whenever this deal is finished. But I'll just hit on some things I've heard and things that stand out to me. Then I just wrote down a bunch of stories, just headlines around the league, just some of my thoughts on each one, and then we'll dive into the Middlecoff mailbag. A bunch of you guys have DM'd me, Instagram, at John Middlecoff is the handle. Slide up on in it and leave your question, anything football related. Let's start with the CBA. And one thing that really jumped out to me, I just think this is crazy. This is insanity to me. Now, I've known this, but I didn't quite know it. One, the playoffs pay dramatically less than the regular season. I just picked not a super rich guy. I picked a guy that makes like $6 million a year. Just a random player who makes $6 million a year. Let's just say that is their salary for the season. For those of you that don't know, a player, unlike if me or you, we make $100,000, we make that over 365, right? We get every 2 weeks direct deposit. If you're an NFL player, now obviously you get off-season bonuses and some other stuff, but in season, if your base salary is $6 million, you get $6 million divided by 17, the bye week counts. So that would be $352,000 gross income, so you make less when taxes are factored in, but $352,000 a game. If you're a team and you make the wild card round, you make $28,000. If you make the next divisional round, you get $31,000. For the conference championship game, $56,000. And if you win the Super Bowl, you get $124,000. If you lose the Super Bowl, you get half that, $62,000. Well, here's the crazy part. If you get a first or second round bye, which obviously that might change with the new CBA where they're adding to the playoff format, you don't get paid for that first round. That is pretty nuts. So the Chiefs made $211,000. So if you're a guy like Frank Clark making $15 million or the Honey Badger making $15 million or Sammy Watkins, as the player, I was DMing back and forth with a player that knows what's going on. He's like, you're really playing for the love of the game. And the craziest thing is in the playoffs, now if you win the whole thing, like Honey Badger is now a legend in Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes a legend in Kansas City. But what about the backup for the New Orleans Saints? I'm just a random guy who made $28,000 in that game, whose base salary is $500,000, who has no guaranteed money on his salary because he was a seventh round pick. And if he shatters his leg in that playoff game, his career's over. As the player told me, and he was so right, in any other business, given the risk versus reward of playoff games relative to financial implications of what you make normally to what you do, this is basically like bonus rounds, they would tell you not to play. And I think back to when I first got into radio right out of the NFL, and I got a radio job relatively quick, about 6 months after I was fired, full-time radio job. I don't know what it paid, maybe it was like $65,000. And one of the things, and I had a two-hour slot, but we had the Raiders. And one of the things I was adamant with the boss of the station that I wanted to do is I wanted to play a role in the broadcast for the Raiders, whether it would be pregame or postgame. And he's like, yeah, you can do the post game for the Raiders. So I did the post game for the Raiders, 20 dates. That's obviously because the Raiders don't play on Monday or Thursday. You're playing on Sunday. I guess they did play. Back then, not every team played on Thursday. Maybe they did, but no Monday nights or no Sunday nights. Basically, every game's at 10 or 1. And I was so fired up, and I did it for like 2, maybe 3 years. And then I realized when I got fired and out of radio, and the big reason was because I was really hard on the Raiders. It was during a rough time, and I was critical because the team was awful. And then you realize when you're partners with teams, they get very sensitive with that, which I didn't quite understand at the time because my boss told me, let it loose. You know, if you believe it, say it. You know what you're talking about. You know football. But here was the main kicker, which I know people that do the pre and post game for the San Francisco 49ers. The going rate to do the pre or post game is like $1,000 a game because it's your Sunday. You know, my partner, Guy, who I still do another podcast with, who I hosted that radio show with, we got paid the same amount at the time to do the radio show, but he got the weekends off and I was working. I didn't get paid, though I didn't care because I was like, oh, this is going to help my career or whatever. It actually was bad for my career. Technically, big picture, was great for my career. But you know what I'm saying? I didn't get compensated for that. And the first couple years, I was so excited. By the third year, I'm like, this is insane. Now, I extended my contract, and I got a huge raise, but not necessarily for those games my third year. And it was one of those things, looking back, I was a moron. And the one thing the players need to fight for in this arrangement is we need more money during the playoffs. Because if I'm a $10 million player and I'm getting $500,000 a game, give or take, and then the playoffs start and I'm getting $30,000, how does that equate? Especially when the leagues are making so much money on the playoffs because the viewership, and it's a big reason they can sell the league at a premium to the networks because so many people are watching the playoff games. Now, and I was... One thing I mentioned to the player, I'm like, well, if you have success in the playoffs, right, and win a conference championship, go to a Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl, your earning potential is forever. He's like, yeah, that 100% is true. The counter, though, is this. What about all the guys on those teams that aren't remembered as legends or that don't play on a Super Bowl team? That's team, the farthest they ever go is in the second round. And one of those years, they get a major injury. Think about this. Navarro Bowman, who at the time was a top 5 non-quarterback in the NFL, his leg was snapped in the NFC Championship game against Seattle Seahawks. His career was never the same, ever. He was out of the league like 2 years later. And for his services that game, he got $56,000. Yet at the time, I think 2013, he was probably making $8 to $10 million a year. So we give these guys so much credit, and they play so hard, and the playoffs are so intense. They are not compensated properly for the playoffs at all. That is something the league gets over on them. And I understand the league and the players love fighting for days off during the regular season, no pads. One of the big things they're fighting for right now is typically when training camp starts. Like I go to Niners training camp. If you go, if the veteran players report July 27th and you show up to practice July 27th, for the first 3 days of the veterans being there, meaning the whole team is finally there, not just the rookies, there are no pads. There is a 3-day kind of, slow process to ease the guys in. There's a specific word for it. It's not at the top of my tongue, tip of my tongue right now, so I don't want to say some stupid word that's not the right word. But there is a process, and it's over a 3-day span. They ease you into it, and on the 4th day of practice, you put on the pads. I read they want to bump that up to 5, and I'm like, the players are fighting for all the wrong things. Who cares? The sport of football is wearing pads. When you fight, when you are a heavyweight fighter, you spar. It's part of football, you got to wear pads. That's the nature of the sport. To me, the things you got to fight for are the playoff checks. Or the other thing that I was told is during training camp, a veteran player gets $1,800 a week. A rookie gets $1,000 a week. Yet, I'm a $10 million employee. And my counter was, well, isn't part of training camp getting ready for the season where that incorporates your $10 million salary? But if anything, I would be like, okay, which that might be true. Why not fight for $10,000 for every veteran a week? Because I am working. Right, if you work, if you get, it's complicated because the way salary structures work, but the number one thing I would tell the players, and I know they know this, and especially like Richard Sherman and the guys that are leading the charge, they understand this, but for whatever reason, it never gets fought for. Stop fighting for days off and no pads. fight for the money. Because you know what the owners have no problem doing? Yeah, let's no pads for 5 days, whatever. Oh, yeah, you guys get the entire week off during the bye. Oh, yeah, you can only have 10 padded practices during the season. You know why? They don't care. You know who cares about that? The coaches. You know what the owner would tell the coach? I pay you $8 million, figure it out. We're trying to make more revenue here for everyone. That's the reason you guys get paid so much. The players are obsessed with days off, acclimation processes for no pads, OTAs, non-mandatory, all the stuff that just the owners are gladly giving them. And they're just fighting for more revenue. Fight for, if I make the playoffs, even if it is a flat rate, let's say everyone makes the same flat rate in the playoffs, it starts at $500,000. And by the time we get to the Super Bowl, it's like $1.4 million. That's what I'd be fighting for. Who gives a shit if you got to have an extra practice during training camp? That's something it always bothers me. And here's something else that bothers me. The owners are screwing the players. That's something you hear all the time. Like, one, ownership right now, because the way society's working, is almost like frowned upon. I don't know about you, where I come from. Every human aspires to own, whether it's a home, whether it's a business, whether it's a car. Like, it's a good thing in this country. Maybe in other countries, ownership and capitalism are bad. Where I'm from, where most people, I guess we have international listeners, that's a positive. So if you're looking for me to bash capitalism, you're probably listening to the wrong podcast. But they owned the team. So I hear this all the players take all the liability. That's not totally true. The owners are in charge of negotiating the major television deals, which pay for everything. They do all that work. They then run a network, the NFL Network, which they split with the players because the revenue all gets split, even though it's not 50-50. It's 51 to 48 or 48 and a half to 51 and a half, whatever it ultimately becomes. Here's the thing, though. On game day, the players, they're definitely, you know, risking their bodies. We all know that. Football is a physical sport. At any moment, your career can end. What about if a guy jumps off the top row at Levi Stadium or at the Link or at AT&T Stadium and falls to his death? Does Jimmy Garoppolo or Carson Wentz or Russell Wilson have to worry about that? Of course not. They shower and they go home. You know whose problem that is? It's the 49ers. That's the Seahawks. That's the Eagles. All the liability in a stadium. And if you're listening to this, I think it's fair to say you've probably been to an NFL game. Even if you've just been to one. It's a pretty crazy place. You have 70,000 people in a stadium. 99% of people don't know each other. Large percentage are males that are drinking. So that's boom. You're talking insurance premiums. It's not a risk-averse place. It's a pretty risky proposition what they're putting on. The teams and the league take all that risk. Again, guy jumps to his death, falls to his death, gets beat up, whatever, has serious medical issues. That's all on the team. So let's stop acting like the owners are just greedy pigs. Yeah, everyone's greedy. We all want more money. Welcome to reality. But here's the other thing. If I'm a partner in a law firm, and I'm not smart enough to ever have gone to law school, but if I had, would just watching movies and reading, you know, books, I guess not many books about lawyers, but, you know, just mainly watching movies, you aspire to become a partner or TV shows, I like Suits, become a partner in that law firm, right? Or an accounting firm. At one point in time, I thought, when I was at Cal Poly, like my second year, like, I'm going to become an accountant. I'm going to work at KPMG, and I'm going to become a partner. Thinking about that potential life right now, I'd rather do a backflip off the Golden Gate Bridge into the Pacific than be an accountant. No offense to accountants. I pay mine a lot of money. It's just I need to kind of get up and move. And listen, I just talk into a mic for a living, so it's not like I'm Mr. Exciting. I just don't think I could have been a great accountant. I'm also probably not smart enough. But that if you're in a law firm or an accounting firm and you become a partner, to my knowledge, you're a partner as long as you stay there. Now, you get benefits when you retire or whatever, but if you go to another firm or quit that firm and go into another industry, I'm pretty sure you're not a partner anymore, right? Well, here's the thing. The players and the owners are tech and the teams are partners, but think about the partners, the players. They're always changing. Unlike the NBA, where LeBron James, who's, you know, a major, one of the most famous players in the history of the league, he's going to have a 20-year career. That is a long partner. Think how many businesses you've been in, even if you're an older guy, listen to this. And I know our demo skews younger. But if you're like 45, have you been in a business partnership for 20 years? That's a long time. The majority of NFL players are in and out of the league in under 4 years. So the partnership is always churning. So like it, you know, just again, this is going to sound harsh, but the reality of the situation is owners look a little bit at the players like widgets because they're constantly turning over beside the quarterbacks. And who are the quarterbacks? The guys paid a premium. They're not really the ones complaining. There's a reason that Russell Wilson and Tom Brady and Drew Brees and Kirk Cousins aren't leading the charge of the NFLPA. They don't care. They're too rich. Life's too good. They make $100 million before you can even blink. So I think this notion that the owners are always screwing everybody, it is a unique business where your partner slash your labor is turning over at rapid speeds. Here's the other element to football. You have enormous costs. You're like, oh, the NBA players make so much money. Yeah, there are 12 guys on a roster. And for example, the Warriors, 4 guys of the 12 are making money. Everyone else is in single-digit millions, and a lot of them are veteran minimum guys. So once you get a couple max guys, most of your guys don't make much money. Baseball, double the size of basketball, still a small percentage of guys are making big money. There are only so many Bryce Harper, Manny Machado contracts out there. Gerrit Cole. It's a small percentage of players. The majority of guys make good money, make football money. $30, $40, $50, $60 million. That's if you're good. I'd say the majority of guys actually don't make that much money. Relative, not to me and you, but just to just professional athletes. So the NFL cost, 53-man roster, practice squad guys. I would imagine in the CBA it grows. Think of your travel costs. You charter a jet to a hotel for, think how many people are on a team, how many people are in the hotel, and think how expensive it is to do that 10 times a year. I guess my ultimate point here is we act like the owners are just pocketing all this money. They do reinvest a boatload of cash into the team, into the employees, into the coaching staff, into their buildings. Now, there are cheap ones, the Mike Browns historically, the Dean Spanoses that somehow is able to get a dollar rent from Stan Kroenke. But I see the Niners. They spend a ton. I would imagine if you're a Seahawks fan, you go, you know what? He spent a lot of money. Jerry Jones, he's making a lot, but he's also spending a lot. I actually think it's, for the most part, in terms of an owner, employee, kind of partner, you know, they can claim they're partners. We all know they're really not. It's a pretty lucrative situation for the players. It's pretty good. And when you factor in the violence of the sport, there's nothing you can do to avoid the injuries. This is not golf. Guys are going to get hurt every game in practice. I'm talking devastating injuries. It's a you're literally tackling the other guy with a helmet on and shoulder pads with guys that run that are the fastest humans in this country. So yeah, there's never going to be a perfect solution. Give the players more. The players need to fight for more. And if they really want to draw a line in the sand, don't be afraid to walk. Because I was told, and it makes complete sense, the owners want to negotiate immediately on the new TV contracts. Ratings are all-time high. They want to strike when the iron's hot. And that's why they're so aggressive into getting a deal done. And the one leverage the players have, because at the end of the day, as I was told, the players' lack of leverage is so many players are so nervous their careers can end at any moment. Careers are short, even for good players. Like a good player can have an 8. Hell, Luke Kuechly, Navarro Bowman. I mean, you're talking the top players. Their bodies fail them before they're 30. So you got to be aggressive and take the money. But the owners, to negotiate the contracts for the television deals with CBS, Fox, you know, ETC, you have to have labor peace, meaning you have to have a deal in place. The Foxes and the CBSs are not going to negotiate a deal if there is not a long-term deal in place. There's just these deals are worth too much money. I can't commit to paying you $5 billion if we might lose a season. Like that can't happen. So that's the owner's urgency. So the one way the players could do is be like, yeah, let's try to talk again in 6 months. Scare the owners. And unless they're willing to do it, in fairness, and I completely understand the player side, it's hard. Because unions represent, especially a union of the NFL size, so many players. And the top couple percent of players making 10 plus million is clearly not the majority. We all watch football. The majority of guys on a team are making under a couple million, or on rookie contracts in the fifth, sixth, seventh, undrafted free agents, not making much money. And those guys, it's just too risky to try to like sit out for big picture. What if the next crop of draft picks, I'm out of the league? So it's a very complicated matter. I really understand both sides, but my only piece of advice is the players have to fight from where it really matters, and that's the checkbook. Okay, let's dive into some topics. And really quick, I know a lot of you guys did it, and I appreciate it. On the Three and Out podcast, if you can, just leave a review. 5 stars, 1 star, whatever you feel. If you like the show, leave a review. Leave a little comment. It helps with all this stuff in the podcast world. A lot of you guys did it on Apple. You can just leave on iTunes, where I think the majority of you guys listens is on iTunes. Just leave a little review there. Appreciate everyone that did, read them. I appreciate all the kind words. And just leave a review. Jarvis Landry, out 6 to 8 months with hip surgery. When I saw he was getting hip surgery a couple days ago, or he just got out of hip surgery, I was like, oh, probably just a little off. 6 to 8 months, that's a pretty legitimate injury. Now, the good thing is he's not a speed guy. He's a crafty route runner, tough guy over the middle. So even if he is a little slower, big picture, probably shouldn't change much. Still, though, 6 to 8 months, when I see that number, I'm like, God, that's a big, I mean, it's almost March. Is he going to be ready for week 1? He's one of their better players. Not ideal. AB, I read, is going to go to the combine, trying to talk with teams. Clearly, he desperately wants to get back in the league. I still think it's an uphill battle, and I'm someone that I think teams and me personally, like character, this is not, we're not teaching life lessons. It's the NFL, it's a business. But his offseason, and really the last 6 or 7 months of, from the Raiders situation to the Patriots situation to him screaming at his wife to that video that came out with the police, it's just, I don't know. You know, that's what it would take for a guy of his caliber, and his caliber is one of the greatest all-time wide receivers we've ever seen for a 5-year stretch. He's going to have a hard time getting back in. It's just a fact. And it would be interesting. I'm going to be at the combine, so if I see him walking around, I'll try to get some video. Jordan Reed, back my last year scouting, I had the tight ends as a cross-check, and the way it works is scouts, you know, if you have a region, like you have the West, you have the Northwest, you have the Northeast, you have the South, you have the Midwest, about this time of year, you get a cross-check position. So maybe you get all the tight ends, maybe you get the running backs and slot receivers, maybe you get all the defensive linemen, and you just kind of cross-check. And I had the tight ends, and Jordan Reed was just a fantastic talent. And when he was healthy, he dominated. But God, he's had how many? It feels like 50 concussions. Just a sad deal. I mean, it's one of the things that kind of makes you cringe sometimes about the NFL is the head injuries. And he's one of the poster childs of the guy that just couldn't avoid him. He was always getting concussed. Everson Griffin, who I tweeted, he became a free agent. He opted out of his deal. He'll get more money than Clowney on the open market. And then I realized he's 32 years old. So, yeah, he probably won't get more money than Clowney on the open market. But he's a really, really good player. Him and Danielle Hunter, you know, combined for arguably the best pass rush in the NFL. But, you know, 32 years old, how much are you willing to pay him? Could he come back? You could argue his best place to succeed would still be with Minnesota in that scheme with Zimmer. Allows him to kick ass and take names. Did have the thing where he kind of lost it a couple years ago, but he seems to have it all under control now. He'll get some money. Derek Carr, there are rumors swirling, and I think we'll really feel it at the combine. Is he going to get traded? Is he on the trading block? If they're going to trade him, who's going to be their quarterback? Like, if they don't get Tom Brady or Phillip Rivers, what are they going to do? He's going to get Jameis Winston? Andy Dalton? Marcus Mariota? I think Carr's better than those guys. So would they trade Derek to the Chicago Bears, get back the 45th pick? I don't know. We'll have to see. But it feels like there's a lot of moving parts with the Raiders, and everything's kind of on the table. Tom Pelissero tweeted, or I saw it on RotoWorld, that it's a long shot for Stephon Diggs to get traded this offseason. It should be. He's, you know, one of their 5 best players, right? If Hunter's their best player, Dalvin Cook's their 2nd best player, little older version of Harrison Smith, you know, Diggs is right there. Diggs is a better player than Thielen. Diggs is a more explosive player than Thielen. If they wanted to trade him, I think they would get a first-round pick. If I was the Niners, I'd give him pick 31 for Stephon Diggs. He's an elite player. Now, he's a diva, and he can be a pain in the ass, but he's not just elite, might be strong. He's a really, really talented, productive player, and he factors into winning. Like, you can win with him. He's been one of the best players on the Vikings over the last 4 or 5 years, and they kicked ass with him. So I would keep Stephon Diggs, unless someone offered me like a first and second round pick. Then I would think I wouldn't even be a lock to trade him. But that's something that it would take. A first might not even get it done. Greg Olsen signed with the Seattle Seahawks. You know, what's the rush to trade or sign a guy? And people have been asking, how does he sign? Free agency doesn't start for another month. When you're a vested veteran and you get cut, you're not in the free agent class. You're just an immediate free agent, whether it happens in February or whether it happens in October. You're free to sign wherever you want. He's not on the same contract cycle as Jadeveon Clowney and Amari Cooper. He was mutually departed, but he was cut. So he becomes immediately an unrestricted free agent. He can sign anywhere at any moment. I think they gave him, I read, over $5 million in guaranteed money. It can be up to $8 million. You know, this guy's been hurt a lot. I like Greg Olsen, super high character guy, going to be a great broadcaster. That's a lot of cash, though. Who are you bidding against? The Redskins? Those are the ones, like, those are the type deals that Belichick never does. He doesn't get himself in a position where you're just kind of overextending yourself for a guy that, we like Greg Olsen, winning player, but he's available for a reason. He's been hurt a lot, and he's old. To me, he's like a $2 or $3 million player with incentives to get to $8 million. $5 million for a team that has a lot of money invested into a lot of guys and needs to spend on some blue-chip talent, that's a lot of cash to spend. Now, if he's healthy, Olsen with Disley and Hollister, they got three really good tight ends. But you notice how I said, if healthy, Disley's coming off a torn Achilles. Hollister, good player. And Olsen just injured a lot. So he broke his foot multiple times. We'll see. But they have a pretty good tight end group. Again, hashtag if healthy. Okay, let's do a couple Middlecoff mailback questions. Let's dive right in at John Middlecoff, Instagram, DMs wide open. Fire me anything. That's how we interact. For those of you new to the pod, for those of you not, shoot me questions. Wanted to get your take on if Brady goes to the Cowboys for 2 years and makes it the NFC Championship game in both and wins the Super Bowl. This is a crazy scenario. Would that be enough to separate him from Belichick and separate him as a system quarterback? I believe at this point in time, no one with any common sense calls Brady a system quarterback. I think we all acknowledge, even if you hate the Patriots, Brady's great, Belichick's great. Now, if they do separate in the next month, which every day that goes by, I feel becomes more and more possible, yeah, then there would be, if Brady has a couple years and Belichick has a couple years, who has more success? The difference, Belichick could coach for another 7 or 8. Brady's 43 years old. So there's a limit on, you know, if he was terrible, let's say it was the opposite. Let's say he went to the Cowboys and went 8-8 and he sucked. He's old. Now if Belichick won the Super Bowl with like Jarrett Stidham or Derek Carr or something, yeah, he'd separate for sure. I put a little bit of a red flag. Red flag's the wrong word. I judge Brady a little differently if he leaves. Like the standard I hold him to moving forward, just because of his age. Will you be doing a 2020 draft pod either before or after the draft? Excited to hear your takes on the next class of rookies. Yeah, you know the great part about the podcast business and 3 and Out podcast and me on Twitter and everywhere you find me. My takes never stop, so we're going to talk draft for the next couple months. I'll be at the Combine next week. When the draft happens, I'll have takes that night. The next week, I'll talk about it more. We'll just keep on talking about it. So yeah, the draft podcast is what we call 3 and Out, so we'll be talking draft for the next foreseeable future. Love your show and your input. Huge Raider fan, so I wanted to ask you, do you think the move to Vegas was beneficial or detrimental? Curious to hear your points on both sides. I think it was 100% beneficial for the Raiders' books. They were broke. They had no money. The only money Mark Davis got was from the league. The team generated nothing locally. TV ratings, nothing. Revenue from their stadium, nothing, because they didn't own it. Place was a dump, no suites. That they will make so much more money. Now, granted, they owe a lot of money. They have a huge note on the stadium. They owe the league like $600 million for a moving fee. But in terms of cash, they'll have way more cash than they have now because they have zero beside what the league gives them every year. And the reality is when you're paying a coach a lot of money and a coaching staff a lot of money and players a lot of money, you don't make that much money. The reason Jerry Jones and Jed York and Jeffrey Lurie, it's the stadiums. They pay for everything. Now, those guys own the stadium or control all the stadium money. It's going to get a little complicated in Vegas, but still, way better situation than now. Where it does get a little complicated is, I also think it'll help getting free agents, no state income tax. Vegas is unique. Players in Vegas, you know, people are like, what about the, they're going to be with strippers. I lived in Philly. There was a place called Delilah's. That's where the players hung out. It was a strip club. What do you think players do in Miami or Chicago or New York? Like, there's stuff to do wherever you go. Now, Vegas is probably considered a little crazier. But I think when you live there, when I was scouting, I used to go there and just stay. And I could function no problem. Just eat and work. And it was pretty easy. So I guess the negatives are just Mark Davis still owns the team. You know, as long as he owns the team, I think you're a little limited. If you could get your next Joe Lacob, Steve Ballmer, David Tepper, then I think the sky's the limit. But well, it's a big unknown for the league, just what it's going to look like. Are they going to be good next year? That's my other question. If you're not good in Vegas, the one entertainment capital of the world, right? Well, you go there to be entertained. You go there to see Celine Dion. You go there to see shows. I've actually never seen a show in Vegas. You go, the Golden Knights got there. They went to the Stanley Cup Finals immediately. You go there to go to a casino. You go there to go to a sports book. Like, I've been to a lot of Raider games over the past decade. A lot of them sucked. And even last year, they lost to the Jaguars at home. They lost to the Jets. Like, they lose. They're just not a very good franchise. They've made the playoffs one time in 17 years. So if they win next year six games, like, we all watch bad football sometimes, and it's boring. It's hard to watch. You better go to Vegas, and you better win. It's why Mark Davis wants Tom Brady. There is tangible pressure on this team to get the job done. Can't go to Vegas and be boring. It cannot happen. I mean, it can because the stadium's free, but it can't happen in the sense of be bad for business. You got to be entertaining. It's why I think there's tangible pressure right now on Sean McVay. Like, his owner just spent six. I don't care if his owner's worth $15 billion. He spent six on the stadium. You got to win. L.A., like Vegas, like, it's hard to enter. In Vegas, there's so much entertainment. In L.A., people are just apathetic. If your team's not good, you got to get the job done. So I think as long as they win, it'll be good. Go Tigers. Huge fan of the pod. I've been a diehard LSU fan my whole life, so it's easy to say this is the best year yet. With most of the SEC losing their quarterbacks to the draft, it should be a more competitive season. Who is the most intriguing team for you this year? Florida is getting a lot of noise, but that's typical thoughts. Agree. I think the curveball this year is going to be Texas A&M. I watched an interview signing day with Jimbo Fisher, and he said like 80% of the snaps last year were between freshmen and redshirt freshmen. He has crushed it in recruiting these last couple years, so a lot of those guys playing are really good. He's won a national championship before. He's was Nick Saban called him the best offensive coordinator he's ever had. He's had a lot of success as a head coach. They're paying him a huge, huge amount of money. He's got a lot of talent on the roster. LSU is not going to be as good this year. They lost a ton of guys, quarterback, who knows. Bama lost a ton of guys and their best quarterback. Auburn actually should be pretty good. Decent amount of guys returning, but a lot of guys in that defense, especially the defensive linemen, are going pro. Ole Miss and Mississippi State are going through transitions. Like you said, Florida and Georgia, on paper, always get picked, have talent. But I'd have to look at A&M's schedule. I think A&M's going to be pretty good. I would expect A&M to be a sleeper. How about this? A&M sleeper national championship team. That's what I'll slip my way too early college football take. Love listening to the pod. And since you're a follower of the 49ers, where do you see Jalen Hurd? He's the wide receiver from Baylor that was a running back at Tennessee. He's like 6'5" guy. Next season in the Niners offense, and do you think he could help them out on the revenge tour? I always struggle with young players that are hurt. You know, he had a stress fracture in his back. It'd be one thing if you're like, you know, he broke his leg going into week one, never played. I'd be like, you know, freak accident, he should be fine. He had a stress fracture in his back. I can't even talk. Stress fracture in his back. That's not a random injury. You know, I hope he comes back because I've walked by him at the practice field and he is huge. A lot of people listening probably didn't watch the Niners' first preseason game. First preseason game, he trucked the dude at the goal line. So, yeah, I mean, he definitely could help. It's unknown. I always struggle with injured young players just because no track record. You know, I don't know. If he's healthy, he helps. If he's healthy, he plays. Let me see this. If Brady does move and the Raiders move off Carr, would the Pats, not having a succession plan, pick up Carr for the future or of the franchise? Also, who, if anyone, would the Pats go for a QB? Chase Stidham ain't cutting it. Cause Stidham, not Chase Stidham. Yeah, I say it all the time. I don't know what Belichick likes in a quarterback. We've only seen him draft random guys like Matt Castle and Ryan Mallett. And then he drafted Jimmy Garoppolo high, which clearly he loved, but he had to get rid of. If Brady leaves, I think everything would be on the table. Would he want Carr to be his franchise quarterback? No. Would he take Carr, though, to be a placeholder? Maybe. I don't think that'd be out of the realm of possibility. As a Colts fan, there are so many different thoughts the ways we could go. Love, Herbert, Eason, or get Rivers, not my favorite, but what about Carr? That depends solely on Brady to Vegas, but still, I feel Carr and Reich are the same guy. Carr greater than Rivers to me. Probably already have this question and no idea how it'll shake down. It just seems that a better idea to me. Well, the thing with Carr, Rivers doesn't cost you anything. You just buy Rivers. You just pay Rivers $20 million. Derek costs you a second round pick if they get Brady or they get Tannehill or, you know, whatever. You got to trade for Derek and give up an asset. Think about Rivers is free that way. I mean, he's not free financially, but you're going to be paying quarterbacks anyway. So, I actually think Rivers would be really good in the dome. I think Derek would be good for them too. But to get Derek, you're going to have to trade for him. And I've talked to enough people, you'd probably get a second round pick for him. You know, he makes $20 million a year. He's under contract for the next 3 years. You can cut him at any moment. It's a very, very team-friendly deal. I'm telling you, I think Rivers has one more revenge season in him. I like Rivers too, you guys. Wish Colin would put you on with him as a guest on the Herd sometime. Hopefully I'll get on next week at the Combine. We'll see if we can make that happen. You think the Raiders could try and deal Carr for picks this season in hopes of getting Lawrence or Fields next year? Yeah, I think John's trying to win. So John's either going all in for Brady or Rivers, or he's going to keep Carr and use those draft picks to try to win next year. They're moving into Vegas to win games. So they're like, to me, the Panthers could tank. You know, that would be a team that could tank. The Raiders are not tanking. The winning in Vegas is too important. There's too much money on the line. There's too much pressure. The state's giving them this free stadium. They can't be what they've been. They have to be better. They just have to be better. There's no way around it. They have to be better. So I think tanking, I mean, Gruden wouldn't tank no matter what, but definitely this year, I don't think that's an option. Appreciate everyone listening. Keep firing me your questions. Enjoy the weekend. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, at John Middlecoff, same as Instagram, I'm going to be all over the Combine next week, inside looks at everything going on. Pretty fired up. Bring you some interesting angles from the Combine that you can't get anywhere else right here on the 3 and Out Podcast. Thanks for listening. And again, have a blessed weekend. Adios.